Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Prep Life podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Enger. And today I have the special privilege of interviewing Dr. Jay Goodbinder. He is the owner and lead clinician of the Epigenetics Healing Center here in Kansas City. He has helped thousands of people from all over the world overcoming autoimmune and life crippling diseases. He has spoken at CNN with Dr. Oz, Harvard Faculty Club with Suzanne Summers, and is the author of the Amazon best-selling book, Defend Your Life. His goal is to make sure that everyone has the ability to choose how they keep themselves and their family healthy, as well as what they put into their bodies. Welcome to the show, Dr. Goodbinder. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. This is very exciting.
Yeah, so I had the privilege of meeting you in Kansas City, and you were discussing female hormones. So that's a little bit about what we're going to be talking about today. But first, I would like for you to share with the listeners your background and history as to how you came about doing this for a living.
Well, obviously, it's thank you for asking me that question. I've obviously expanded a ton. You know, we've gotten bigger and bigger and bigger very quickly over the last, you know, about 10 years. But I mean, it all started with me having a real rough go with my own health. I had psoriatic arthritis. I could not use my hands. They're very swollen. They're like basketballs. I had scabs and scales over my skin. I had psoriasis all over my body, psoriatic arthritis in my hands and my wrists. It was hard to turn doorknobs. It was hard to turn my steering wheel. And I felt at that point, you know, obviously aesthetics matter. How you look matters. And at that time, I was not married. I didn't have kids. And I was just like, why do we want to live anymore? This is awful. I look like a monster. And why would anyone ever marry me? Why would any girl ever go out with me if, you know, one, not only do I look what I thought was terrible because I had all these scabs and scales over, I also couldn't use my hands, so if I ever had children, I would never be able to play ball with them. And I was an athlete. I wouldn't be able to play ball, football, baseball. No, you know, go play with your mom. Daddy can't do it. And it was just a bad cycle of whole thought of how everything was happening and, you know, pleading, like, why is this happening to me? And the doctor actually said, you know, I'm sorry, you're unlucky. It's genetic. You'll learn how to live with it, though. And that wasn't good enough. So I, after some serious, serious depression, decided to become a doctor to fix myself because I didn't feel like anyone else could help me. And I was on 6 medications by the age of 23. And now at the age of 42, I'm on no medications at all. I feel freaking awesome. I graduated valedictorian in my doctoral class, valedictorian in my postdoctoral education. Spoken all the world about it now. And I feel awesome. Literally jump out of bed like a lion to serve my purpose every single day. And that's how I ended up here. Just literally a passion going, you know, why, instead of being a victim and saying, you know, why am I here? I'm just going to sit here and just want to die the rest of my life. I chose to be my own kind of hero and go, well, no matter what it takes, I'm going to fix this. So I did.
That's incredible. It's so inspiring. And you were just sharing with me right before we hopped on to record here that you are actually going to be competing in your first bodybuilding competition.
Yes. I don't know much about it at all because I just got permission from my wife to do it. But I've always lifted heavy. I've always been a lifter, and I'm just excited to compete at something. And at 42, you're just like, what else can I compete at? You know, if I'm going to play softball or something, I'll probably pull a hamstring. Can't really do any of that stuff. I'd rather just lift weights. And so I know there's a lot more to it than that. I look forward to finding out everything I possibly can about it as I go through the process.
That's awesome. So can you start by explaining what epigenetics is for those listeners that maybe don't know?
So epigenetics is neat. If you're thinking that epigenetics is natural medicine, well, although most of the time it is, it's not natural medicine. You know, if you go to a traditional doctor, you get high cholesterol, they give you a statin drug. You go to a natural doctor, they give you red yeast rice, which has naturally occurring statin in it. So they'll lower your cholesterol, but no one ever asks the question, you know, why is my cholesterol high? You know, is it, you know, cholesterol makes up the majority of your brain, the majority, 30 to 50% of every cell membrane, the majority of your sex and stress hormones, and you're producing high levels for a reason. So we need to figure out why that is, fix that, the root cause and then stop giving you a bunch of pills and supplements and trying to make you do all these things. The goal is to fix it and get out, not make you dependent on me forever. Now, that was my, that's the way we practice here, but epigenetics really is, epigenetics really is the expression of disease. So if you imagine you have a billion circuit breakers all over the room you're sitting in right now, and only a handful of them are turned on, those represent your genes. So your genes, just because you have a gene doesn't mean it's expressing itself, doesn't mean it's turned on. But you have all these circuits that go to the room. And so you get bad diet, you don't exercise, you don't move enough, you don't handle stress well, you have organ dysfunction, you have hormonal imbalances, you have toxic exposures, you have infections. And at some point, there's enough energy going to that room that other circuit breakers pop. When those pop, that's your rheumatoid arthritis, colitis, Crohn's disease, diabetes, alopecia areata, lupus. Those are all those type of diseases that come on later in life when your body's overwhelmed and the circuit breakers pop. And so if as the Epigenetics Healing Center, what we want to do is decrease all of those overages in electricity to the room so that those circuit breakers can come back to normal and you don't have to express your disease anymore.
I love that. So if you were to have somebody to come in and, you know, they're kind of doing a lot of the right things. So they're drinking plenty of water, they're exercising, they're eating right, and maybe they're having a hard time losing weight, or they're getting, you know, fatigue symptoms and things like that. What are some things that you all test for there at your place, and how do you address those types of issues?
Well, I mean, that's a big question.
Yes. Sorry, that was a lot.
First off, anytime I sit down with someone, you know, we put an hour on the schedule. It doesn't necessarily take that long, but I always have an hour out there depending on what people are dealing with. And I sit down and figure out what the appropriate labs to take are. We typically, when someone comes here, you're looking for the most in-depth laboratory testing that exists anywhere in the world. I mean, that's why people have come here from 17 different countries. It's not because, you know, we're running run-of-the-mill testing. But I'll sit down with you, and first thing is, you know, how is your gut responding to things? Are you having normal bowel movements? Do you have to take things in order to have bowel movements? Are you gassy? Are you bloated? Do you have all these type of things? And you go, okay, I do have issues or I don't. Or, hey, did you have a bad accident and hit your head? And I bring that up because your blood-brain barrier and your gut barrier are made of the same tissue. So when you damage one, you damage both. The reason that the gut is so important, that's where you absorb your nutrients from. That's where you start to create your neurotransmitters. That's where you create your hormones from. Everything starts in the intestine. And if you've damaged that, that's connected to your portal vein, which goes to your liver. And now you're overwhelming your liver with all sorts of things. And you know how important your liver is. So, hey, all right. So let's find out if you have some permeability in your gut. Do you have any exposures to mold? Do you have any heavy metal toxicity or poisonings? Is that necessary to even test? Because obviously we're an all cash facility. I'm trying not to test anything that doesn't need to be tested, right? Because when people come in and they're having to pay for it, you have to be a little bit more concerned with, all right, if this isn't necessary, I'm not going to do it. It may be stool sampling. It may be neurotransmitter testing. It may be hydrogen breath testing to see if people have small intestinal bacterial overgrowths. Big medical paneling. Hey, you know what? People come in with Alzheimer's. We've had a lot of Alzheimer's patients here. We've been very successful with our Alzheimer's patients. There's a bunch of factors that Alzheimer's patients have in common. They have high blood sugars over a three-month period of time, typically. They're pre-diabetic or they're diabetic. They have high inflammation. They have low thyroid function. And again, you know, we do the most in-depth thyroid testing you can do anywhere. We look at their adrenal function, DHEA, pregnenolone. We look at all their hormones, testosterone, estrogens, progesterones, plus all the cascading hormones that come from those. I mean, there's just a ton. Do you have any Clostridia infections, bacterial overgrowths, fungal overgrowths, candida? Do you have, you have to test so many things when you really want to figure out why everything is the way it is so that people don't have to be on supplements the rest of their lives. You know, we've done great with depression and anxiety. Do you want to be on St. John's Wort the rest of your life or Zoloft? Or do you want to figure out why you're having that problem in the first place? It's always about finding out why. And that's why we go above and beyond the testing.
Okay, so a lot of bodybuilders, our population tends to have issues with thyroid. So what are some steps that if you feel like, you know, you're having some of the telltale signs of under active thyroid? What are some things that need to be looked at and addressed?
All right. So thyroid is so important. And it's not, obviously, everyone notices right away, like, I'm having trouble losing weight, or I don't have energy, or my hair is falling out, or I have no libido anymore, or I'm having anxiety or depression. And those are all different, or my bones are thinning. Those are all things that are very common with thyroid sufferers. Most commonly, people have low thyroid, and sometimes it starts high and then goes to low because the thyroid dies. But we want to understand why there's thyroid autoimmunity. So that's going back to the gut permeability type stuff. with that being said, what needs to be looked at for thyroid is you have different parts, right? So the process of creating thyroid begins in your hypothalamus of your brain. And that hypothalamus tells your pituitary, hey, pituitary, make some thyroid stimulating hormone. And everyone's pretty much heard of thyroid. You've heard of thyroid stimulating hormone, correct?
Yes, I have hypothyroidism, so I probably have a little bit more knowledge than the average person, though.
Fair enough. So thyroid-stimulating hormone is not a thyroid hormone. It's a pituitary hormone that tells your thyroid what to do. And a lot of your listeners out there, and maybe this is the way it began for you, you go to a doctor and doctor tests TSH. And they go, oh, well, your TSH is really high, so you must have low thyroid. Here's thyroid medication. And you're on that forever. They literally say you'll be on this forever. Well, after you realize that they're not testing your thyroid at all, they're testing your pituitary, then you go and look at thyroid hormones. You say, okay, well, here's my T4, which comes out of my thyroid, my T3 that after your T4 gets converted through your liver, you create your T3, and then some of your inactive T3 goes to your intestine to create free T3, the most active form of thyroid hormone, where you're really getting your motor, you're getting your energy, you're getting your weight loss, you're getting all the good things. And there's a thyroid receptor in the nucleus of every single cell of your entire body. So if your thyroid doesn't work, nothing works. So you have to understand, first off, the flow. So want to make sure your liver's working right, want to make sure your intestines are working right, want to make sure your pituitary is working right, and then your thyroid, of course, is working right. When we talk about pituitary, the reason that it's not sufficient to just do TSH, because it's not always, hey, TSH is high, so your thyroid must be low, is because a lot of time people come in with low thyroid and their TSH is low too. And for a lot of doctors, that doesn't make sense. We have a lot of doctor patients who come here and they go, I don't understand. Why does that make sense? Because it's a feedback loop. It should just be very simple. When the TSH goes high, your thyroid goes low. And that's not true, because you also have something called the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis. Am I keeping you with me here? Is everything okay so far?
Yes.
I just want to make sure I'm not going too wild.
No, not at all. And I would say, like, for me personally, my TSH actually tested normal, but my doctor fortunately went deeper and did test my T3 and T4. But yeah, no, I'm right with you.
You're sticking with me. Okay. Yeah. So with that being said, you have your hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis. Those things go together. Like, if you're a hardcore lifter, you're bodybuilding like crazy, you're working out really hard, maybe you're taking some energy creating supplements, like a bunch of caffeine and synephrine and ephedrine, are things like pre-workouts where you're really pushing your adrenal system. Over time, you're going to create a high cortisol response. And let me tell you how that affects everything. So the hypothalamus tells the pituitary, hey, I'm going to use this corticotropin releasing hormone. And then adrenocorticotropin comes from the pituitary to tell the adrenals what to do. And from the adrenals, you get three things. You get aldosterone, which is going to keep your sodium and chloride up and push potassium down. You're going to get cortisol, which is obviously going to push your sugars up and also is a long-term chronic stress indicator. When that goes high, and that actually helps your sleep-wake cycle too. So if you notice you're not sleeping well, that a lot of time can have something to do with adrenal dysfunction and not having appropriate cortisol release versus melatonin, which are actually the opposites of each other. And I want to put this out there right now, and hope they don't forget where I am. Please do not take melatonin. You will stop your brain from producing melatonin. You can do things like 5-HTP, which is a precursor to serotonin and melatonin. But don't just take direct out melatonin. I'm very much against that because it really does make dependency and it can create issues with down the road. Another thing that comes out of your adrenal glands, though, is your androgens. So that's where you can start creating your testosterone, muscle building, and things like that. But if you're doing pre-workouts for a long period of time, a lot of the time you will hyperstimulate that cortisol, and cortisol then will give you a negative feedback to your pituitary, and your pituitary will stop producing the adrenocorticotropin. So your testosterone levels will drop. You get more tired. You won't be able to sleep right anymore, because not only do you need cortisol to be not too high, you need it to be not too low as well. You won't be able to lose weight at the same time. And then this comes back to the pituitary, because now you're messing the thyroid, because you're messing with the pituitary when you create negative feedback there. Now we understand why TSH, your thyroid may be really low, but your TSH may be low too because of the adrenal stress you have going on. And now your TSH is low and your doctor's telling you, sorry, there's nothing wrong with your thyroid. It's all in your head. Go see a psychologist. But it's just because they didn't do the testing to look at your whole thyroid. They just looked at your pituitary the whole time.
Interesting. Okay. So you had mentioned the liver. Is there a particular thing that we should be testing with the liver? And what should doctors be looking for when it comes to liver function and making sure that that's okay?
Well, I mean, typically a quick, easy liver function is just doing a comprehensive metabolic panel, or some doctors do basic. You got to do comprehensive though. It's literally like a no cost difference, but you get a lot more information. So you do a comprehensive metabolic panel, and maybe, I mean, it's not expensive. The you want to look at ALT and AST. Those are two of your liver enzymes. And if those go above 20, our range is 20. We want a 20 or below. If it goes above 20, then we're starting to get some liver dysfunction. There's a bodybuilder I follow online. I'm not going to mention any names. And somebody, you know, that's like the fun thing to do online for people is they go, oh, you're jacked. You must be on all these illegal things. And it's annoying to watch because obviously people are working out really, really hard and they're showing their stuff on social media. And then someone's like, oh, it's just because you use steroids. And this guy's like, I don't. And my labs are perfect. Here's a picture of my labs. And I looked at it. And I'm like, you have clearly a fatty liver. Something's really wrong with you because your liver enzymes are terrible. You know, and so I'm like, this wasn't a ringing endorsement for you being a healthy person, but as long as your doctor says so, that's okay. Neither here nor there. The point is that liver enzymes, you want them below 20. This person was probably up in the 40 range. And I've talked to a good pathologist here in town who basically said, if you're over 30, you've lost 60% of your liver function. If you're over 40, you've lost 80% of your liver function. Your liver, it's number one. So its main responsibility, a lot of people think liver detoxifies. Well, it does. But that's not its main responsibility. Its main responsibility is to deaminate proteins. It takes proteins apart. That's where you create your neurotransmitters. That's where you start to recreate cells and the building blocks of creating cells. It's so important if you want to be an elite athlete to have an appropriate liver function. But it's also where you create all your hormones from. So you make cholesterol, and cholesterol is the building block of all your hormones. So it is so necessary to have all that liver function. So ALT, ALT, AST, and ALT are two of them. GGT, or gamma glutamyl transferase, can indicate there's a liver problem as well. But that can also indicate pancreatic issues too. But those are probably the best, just simple liver tests to make sure your liver's doing okay.
When you test cortisol, do you prefer a Dutch test or a saliva test, something like that? So, can you kind of go over how to test that in the most appropriate way?
So the best way to test cortisol is saliva or urine. Either one is fine. It depends on what you want. If you want all of your hormones tested and cortisol, urine's the way to go, because a lot of people are testing hormones with saliva, and I don't see the accuracy on it. I see some wild variations on levels, whereas on urine is pretty consistent. I do it 5 months later. I go, okay, so this is better, this is better, this is better. And it's pretty consistent. Like, everything's just right. On saliva, you can get some wildly differing numbers from test to test. However, on cortisol, it is very accurate. So either one works, but I prefer one or the other. Either of those fine. Blood is not the way to go for cortisol. And when you do it, you want to do it all throughout the day so you can get the whole sleep-wake cycle circadian rhythm. You know, in the morning, your cortisol should be fairly high, and that should slowly come down so at nighttime you sleep like a baby, because the inverse relationship is melatonin. Melatonin should be very low in the morning and high at night. But if you're having a cycle where it's up and down all day, you'll do the same thing at night, and then you worry about hippocampus dysfunction and Alzheimer's disease, because Alzheimer's is a dysfunction or damage to the hippocampus of your brain, which is where you start to regulate your circadian rhythm from there.
Okay. So when you're looking at adrenals, how can you kind of assess where those are at? I know that there's not technically, other than Addison's or Cushing's disease, there's not such a thing as adrenal fatigue, but
That's right.
What do we do to look at to see if our adrenals are in a good spot?
So, like you said, the Dutch test, we use a different urinary hormone test that gets us like four times the data that's on a Dutch.
Okay.
But neither here nor there. I mean, that's the best way to go, because you're going to be able to see the whole cortisol cycle. You'll see your aldosterone. You'll see your pregnenodiols. You'll see your DHEA and DHEA sulfate. So you can actually see the way you're breaking down all the different adrenal hormones. What's really interesting is when you run a blood test of, let's say, DHEA, which is an adrenal hormone, and pregnenolone, which is an adrenal hormone, you get both of those on a blood test, and then you do the urine test, and you can see the way you're metabolizing it. And so sometimes you'll see a really low level on, let's say, DHEA on a blood test, and then on the urine, it'll be really high. And so what you see is you're just dealing with so much stress, you're metabolizing your adrenal hormones so fast, you're going to burn yourself out. And it's real interesting, because if you give someone DHEA in that situation, they get a lot of anxiety, because you're just adding more fuel to their anxiety fire when you throw the DHEA in. Even though it says it's low on the blood test, when you see the high level on the urine, it's a totally different ballgame.
Gotcha. Okay. That's interesting. So in terms of female sex hormones, can you kind of dive into what are the best things to test in terms of like blood work and things like that, and kind of some telltale markers that we need to look out for as females in the bodybuilding world?
Okay. So this is super important, right? So what are we doing hormonally in the bodybuilding world? So obviously, you want to have good testosterone levels, because that's going to be your strength and muscles. But estrogen's important too. Estrogen's going to give you the thick, more of a. It's estrogens keep you from looking older. It is important to have those, but it's important to have the appropriate ones. So a couple of things we test is obviously you want to test your testosterone. You want to check your dihydrotestosterone to make sure you're not going to get zits all over your face. You want to make sure that your hair is not going to fall out, but you also want to check something called epitestosterone. And a lot of people don't know what that is. Almost every doctor who comes to see me, they don't know what that is. Have you ever heard of epitestosterone?
I haven't.
Ha ha! Winner. So epitestosterone is a less bioavailable, less actionable testosterone, but it does block testosterone receptors. So even if you think that you have good testosterone levels, if you have high epitestosterone, you may have symptoms of low testosterone, because it actually blocks the ability to utilize it. So we test that standard. But you want to know what those numbers are. But then you also want to know not just your estradiol, estriol, and estrone, because most people know what those are. You want to see the downwards cascade of how that goes through your liver through a pathway called cytochrome 1B1 in your liver. And if you have a healthy liver, you have a better chance. Some people have a genetic predisposition to breast cancer, uterine fibroids, ovarian cysts, fibrocystic breast disease, endometriosis, those type of things. And so if you are metabolizing through that cytochrome 1B1, you create these proliferative estrogens. You get 16 alpha hydroxyestrone, 4 hydroxyestrone, and 4 hydroxyestradiol. Those three are proliferative cancer-causing estrogens. And you need to make sure you're not metabolizing through those pathways to create those things, because that is where you create those feminine issues. And if you are taking, or if your testosterone is high, you do have to worry about aromatizing to more estrogens, and then worrying if those estrogens are going to go down and create the proliferative estrogens. Along with adrenal stress and things like that, we talked about liver function. So your liver goes and your liver creates cholesterol esters. Those cholesterol esters then go down to create pregnenolone, which is your adrenal hormone. Pregnenolone can go one of two ways. It can go down through DHEA and create your testosterone and estrogens. It can also go through the progesterone pathway. So pregnenolone can make progesterone, and then progesterone will go create your cortisol for your stress hormone. But a lot of people do something called pregnenolone steal, or the cortisol shunt, where you pull all that extra pregnenolone away to make more cortisol, and it'll make you dry in all of your testosterone and estrogens. and your progesterones, because you're just going to steal it all to make your stress hormone. Because you don't, you're not thinking about creating muscle or reproducing when you're under stress. If a lion is chasing you, you're not thinking about, oh, I need to have babies.
Right.
You're thinking, I need to get away from the lion. So sure enough, you're under this high level of stress, and you may have more troubles with urge incontinence. You may have more trouble with constipation and things like that at that point, because fight or flight plays a role in controlling your sphincters. So if you can't control your urinary sphincter, you're more likely to be more incontinent. And if you can't relax at all, if you can't get out of fight or flight, or if you are in fight or flight, you may have diarrhea. If you're in a fight or flight consistently, you may end up with diarrhea because your sphincters are staying open, and you won't be able to reabsorb your water fast enough, so you'll end up with more loose stools. If you burnt out your adrenals altogether, you may find out that, hey, I feel like I have to go, but I can't, and I'm pushing, and then I get a walnut out, and you're like, oh, I know there's more there. That is total adrenal fatigue. It's like, hey, I can't relax my sphincter because so your sphincters are controlled by fight or flight, as I said before. So if you are under a constant state of fight or flight, and then you can't do it anymore, you can't keep up with the stress, the fight or flight response is how you open those sphincters in your rectum and your anus and things like that. And if you can't create the fight or flight response, those things will stay closed, and you'll be trying to poop against a closed door. And that's tough.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that, you know, as competitors, we put our bodies through an overreaching process when we are dieting down, you know, on low calories and higher cardio and things like that. So these are important things to be aware of, I think, for sure. Okay, so you talked about the pregnenolone steal, and you had mentioned briefly the hormone cascade that happens. Can you just elaborate a little bit more on some of the things that can impact?
We can go back to the whole situation where it's like, hey, if we're stealing our pregnenolone, which is kind of our mother hormone, so now you're not gonna make any of your hormones, right? So it's, you know, between vaginal dryness and discomfort, in that process, libido can be significantly down again, because we're not thinking about that sort of thing while lions are chasing us. We're also worried about a lack of muscle growth. If at some point in time we're also not creating enough cortisol, because we've already burned all of that out, we're going to have trouble regulating our blood sugar. So if you want to do, like, let's say you want to do some intermittent fasting or something like that, you're not going to be able to keep your sugars up. So you're going to end up with sugar lows and get headaches and brain fog and all sorts of things like that. And as we're under that much stress, cortisol doesn't just help you with energy. At high levels, it stops you from doing a lot of housekeeping in your body. So if we're talking about housekeeping, we're about keeping our tissue permeability appropriate, our tissue growth appropriate, things like that. You don't want to burn all the muscles out that you're trying to build. And if we end up, again, going back to intestinal permeability, if you're under high levels of stress, you will damage your blood-brain barrier. You can end up with migraine headaches. You can end up damaging your brain to a point where you can't control your thyroid. You can end up opening up the permeability in your intestine and pushing things into your portal vein up to your liver, damaging your liver. You can end up with rashes and hives and things like that, because one of the inflammatory markers on your gut tissue is called eosinophilic protein X. That goes into your portal vein up to your liver. Your liver takes off the protein as it deaminates proteins. We talked about that before. And then eosinophils are going through your blood at a high level. That's your allergy. So you go, my kid has lots of eczema. Like, right. So were you super stressed out during pregnancy? Did you have a vaginal delivery? Did you breastfeed for a year? You have to look at all those type of things, because now we're, okay, so do we have intestinal permeability, or did baby just get blown out from all their adrenal ability and ability to control their inflammatory markers very early on? Or did they get permeability because you breastfed great, you went through the vaginal canal great, so you got the vaginal mucosa in the nose and mouth and created the coating for a good microbiome. But you were super duper stressed out trying to be perfect on everything during that. So that's something that women, I just hope everyone can hear me out there. You can strive to do your best, but it's really okay not to be perfect. Just everyone should know that it's okay not to be perfect. But the point is that it can create more damage just by being so stressed that a baby couldn't even control its own inflammatory markers coming out because they had to either, you basically were so stressed that your baby's adrenal glands aren't going to be able to grow the way they should because they didn't need to, because you were giving so much cortisol and stress hormone to the baby that they didn't need to create it. And your body always seeks to redistribute energy. So like, hey, you know what I'm saying? Don't take melatonin. Don't do that to sleep. Because if you do, brain's not going to produce it. Because you're always seeking to save energy. So if you're putting melatonin in, your body's not going to produce it. I don't want to produce that anymore. I can shift that energy to something else, especially under high levels of stress. As far as the thyroid, again, it's in everything. So you can end up with osteoporosis. You can end up with severe constipation or diarrhea. You can end up with thyroid cancers even, because of autoimmunity. If you keep attacking tissue over and over, you have to rewrite the DNA to create that tissue. So if you have one problem with the rewriting of the DNA, you're going to create an irregular cell. If you're under so much stress that you've retarded your own immune system, now you won't be able to see the differentiated cell, and that can now start reproducing. And you start reproducing irregular cells over and over and over again. That creates tumors or creates cancer. Those aren't good things. And so having your stress under control, using things to support you while you're in high stress situations, getting tested to find out what's really going on so you do the right thing from get-go and don't just randomly put in supplements, that's important. One of the other things that some people might like in this community that we're talking to right now is we do. Do you know what a hemoglobin A1C is?
Yes.
Okay. So that's your blood sugar over a 3-month period of time. It's not like taking your blood sugar in the morning and going, okay, where you're at, because every day it could be different. A1C is 3 months. So we actually have a micronutrient panel that looks at vitamins, minerals, amino acids over the last 3 months. So you actually get a good reading and you know this is what you're looking like over the last 3 months versus just what do I have in my body today? That's actually a pretty cool test to really know what you're deficient in or toxic in.
Okay. Can you go into a little bit more depth about gut permeability? I'm assuming you're kind of talking leaky gut type of situation. So competitors have a tendency to not, for whatever reason, especially people that follow like meal plans and things like that, they have a tendency to gravitate towards repetitive food cycles and things like that where gut microbiome may be suffering. Can you kind of elaborate a little bit on what that is and what are some ways that we can prevent that or?
Yeah, I think so first, you have actin and zonulin. Actin and zonulin are like these little, it's like they're kind of like the protein glue that sits between your cells of your intestine to make sure that you aren't too permeable and start pushing medium, large-sized food particles through. As we create autoimmunity, those will eat them up, and then you'll end up with permeability, which is kind of the leaky gut type stuff. And that can all be tested. We can test all those things. But it is important to have some diversity within your diet. Now, diversity doesn't necessarily mean like, hey, I haven't had cake and ice cream today, so I probably need to have that. And tomorrow I'll have mint chip, but today I had coffee flavor. That's not diversity. I mean, I love the idea. If that were, I'm all game, but that's not the way it works. The goal is, I'm very much into the understanding that, in the first year of life, you create a microbiome, you create roots for good bacteria, and that good bacteria keeps you in a healthy environment. You have a mucus layer that forms over your intestine, and that mucus layer will protect you. Under high levels of stress, you'll get rid of that mucus layer. And so what do we do in order to keep that mucus layer, to not create too much inflammation? I like not a million food groups personally. I like potatoes, sweet potatoes, meats, vegetables, fruits, all good things. Eggs, all great. But the important thing is, hey, I'm not just gonna eat. If I eat chicken breast and broccoli every single day, it's only going to have certain bacterial content that it's going to feed. When you only feed one bacteria or two bacteria, which is not accurate, I mean, it's going to feed a handful, but you're not feeding a whole lot of different strains of bacteria, you become very specific to only one bacteria that is growing and everything else is dead. Now you have an imbalanced gut microbiome, which is going to create more inflammation in your whole body, not just in your intestine, but in your whole body. As well as your intestine and as well as your brain. People talk about probiotics. I think probiotics are great. It's also important to change strands of probiotics on a consistent basis. You know, as long as you don't get gassy and bloated, fermented foods are good, but I will also warn on those. I have a patient who's very much into his microbiome, and he's doing actually really great. He did bad for a long time, and he's doing really wonderful now, which is awesome. But we just retested him for some things, and everything that we were trying to kill is gone, except he has dysbiotic or pathogenic candida or yeast in his intestine now. And I said, you know, how has this happened? Have you been having a bunch of fermented foods? He's like, yes, that is something I do. I eat all this sauerkraut and kombucha. And I'm like, all right, well, just keep in mind, like, kombucha is a symbiotic colony of bacteria and yeast. Do you know how much is bacteria and how much is yeast? Well, no. Well, apparently too much of it is yeast, and you have a pathogenic strain now. So just because something sounds like it's holistic and natural doesn't mean it's necessarily healthy. And if you are just eating one food every day or two foods every day, you will mess with your biodiversity and create other issues down the road.
What are your thoughts on gluten specifically, and I guess with just special populations such as people that do have thyroid, hypothyroidism or Hashimoto's or any sort of autoimmune type of disease? And then same with like dairy and sugar, kind of what are your stances there when it comes to the people that have the autoimmune versus just somebody that maybe doesn't even have that? What are your thoughts?
I think those three are the devil regardless. So gluten itself, you only can digest somewhere between 40 and 60%. Somewhere on average, we'll say 50% of the proteins associated with gluten and the gliadins that are getting in your intestine. When things get into your intestine, you have these things called microvilli. They look like little fingers in your intestine. They increase surface area so you can absorb more nutrients. When the gluten gets in there and you haven't digested it, you'll create an immune response to try to eat that up. And that's where you really start attacking, and you hit like the zonulin or the actin, and you start damaging these things and creating permeability. It's not good for really anyone. I've tested many people to see. We have special tests that look at every single protein in wheat to see if you can really have it. One person has come back and almost had none of it, but they had like two different proteins they were sensitive to. But everyone's got multiple sensitivities to gluten, and even if you don't have autoimmunity, it's creating other issues. And I don't know why that is. Some people say it's the glyphosate. Some people say it's the Roundup. Some people say it's the genetic modification. I don't know why that is, because I imagine not throughout history it's not been that way. But I will say this. Hunters and gatherers, people that are out, like the Inuit and different tribes that are undeveloped, who literally live on wild game and berries and vegetables, are relatively free of any chronic disease. Which obviously, according to the CDC, we have somewhere between 60 and 80% of our entire adult population that has at least one chronic disease now. We have a very, very unhealthy population. It's unprecedented, the amount of problems with health that we have in our community right now. The reason dairy is typically a problem is between the ages of 5 to 7, almost everyone becomes lactose intolerant, whether they realize that or not. That's research supported that we just don't produce any lactase. Northern Africans and Northern Europeans, they last to somewhere between 20 and 22, but even after there, they're lactose intolerant. So you're putting in a carbohydrate that doesn't break down well for you because you don't have any lactase anymore. There's also something called casein-1 protein, A1 protein, which it will, it's, what's it called, genetic mimicry of gluten. So those actually look very similar. They're very difficult to break down. They do create autoimmunity. If you have a thyroid disorder, most people with thyroid disorders, over 90%, have an autoimmunity to their thyroid. If you ever want your thyroid back and to get off that medication, you have to take care of that. And if you have any gluten or any dairy, one time you'll shoot your antibodies way back up again. You can't even mess around. And then sugar itself is super, super duper inflammatory. It is pure, just unadulterated energy with no reflection of antioxidants to protect you from the oxidation from the energy. So obviously, the less inflamed we are when we're already trying to work out really hard, it's inflammatory. I mean, you're breaking tissue down so you can rebuild it. If you're putting in things outside of you that are inflaming you more, you're going to get more aches and pains while you lift. It's going to be harder to push yourself because you're going to get little injuries here and there. And those three things really are going to be good for no one.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, that was very, very helpful. So in terms of, You had said that you do a hydrogen breath test for people that you believe to possibly have SIBO. Is that correct? Are there any other tests that you do to, what other types of processes do you use to test to kind of figure out what's going on in the gut?
I mean, so we can run, you know, we do 3-day stool catches, and everything we do is world class. I mean, every single test that we run here, if you do a test, is a giant test. So like our stool test looks for like the whole microbiome. You know, do you have enough good bacteria? Do you have enough short chain fatty acids? Do you have parasitic infections? Do you have inflammatory markers? Do you have IBS or IBD? If we find a pathogen, we'll get in vitro testing to see what natural product kills that. We do organic acid testing to see if there's any bacterial overgrowth or fungal overgrowth or candida and neurotransmitters and glutathione levels and mitochondria and cellular nutrients. We can run the lectin testing to see if you have lectins that damage you, which are just they're unhealthy phytochemicals that you get in different foods. We can do food sensitivity testing. We can do intestinal permeability testing, see if you have autoimmunity to your intestinal tract. SIBO definitely is one of the hydrogen breath tests or methane breath tests. We run both. That can tell us if you have intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which is, by the way, I feel so bad for people who have that. It is something you have to be so perfect on your dietary stuff for like months and months until we fix it. And then you can go back slowly to your regular diet, but you got to be pretty consistent to fix that. And I get, you know, a lot of people come in here being like, I went to my doctor, they gave me Rifaximin. I did two cycles. Each cycle for 1 week is like $1,500. Insurance doesn't cover it. And it was fine for a while, and it came right back. I'm like, right, because you never fixed anything. You just killed off the bacteria. That's what happens. Anyway, I mean, mostly it's going to be organic acid and permeability testing and food sensitivity testing and lectin sensitivity testing. Stools, breath tests. That's pretty much what we do for, depending on what you need. You know, we go through symptoms. It's not no one has a cut and dried, like this is what everyone gets. It's always specific to whoever sits with me and talks to me.
Sure. So can you elaborate a little bit more on your food sensitivity tests? I know there's different types of food sensitivity tests.
Yeah.
How is yours different than, let's say, like an Everly Well that you would?
You are not the first to ask that question. actually, I have a personal trainer who came here from my gym, and she's like, so why am I paying this much for your test when I can get an Everly for like $100? Like, well, it's reproducibility. So if you do an Everly today and you do an Everly tomorrow, you're going to get somewhere between 65 and 70% similar results. But there's going to be some things that aren't going to match up. And you go, why doesn't that match up? Well, maybe because it's not the best and most high-end test. When you do our test, you're looking at 100% reproducibility on 90 of 96 foods. And of the 5 of the 6 that are left, you get 96. And then of the 1 that's left from there, you get 93%. So it's a very, very accurate test. It's very reproducible. And people see significant results when they remove something that's on it. And I mean, we actually did it for my youngest son. My wife was very stressed out during her second pregnancy because I'm a bit of a perfectionist. I've learned to get over some of those things. So I stressed my wife out more than she needed to be stressed out for her second child. Plus she breastfed through the entire pregnancy because we got pregnant 7 months later after we had our first baby. But anyway, so he has some permeability issues. And we're trying to do all the right things using, you know, good probiotics and differentiating the strands and using bovine serum to try to heal up his intestine. We have him on our life support product. We're doing a lot of good things. But anyways, he ended up getting some eczema behind his ear and on his penis. And I'm just like, this is unbelievable. We should do a food sensitivity and just see if we're giving him the wrong food. So he agreed to get his vein stuck. He's 8 years old. And so we did it, which he cried. I mean, he's got the most adorable little tears. I mean, giant tears for this little boy. It's adorable. But anyways, so we find out on this test that he has an issue with olives and garlic and tomatoes, of which he eats tomatoes like apples. So he just sits there and eats them. And then he's been asking for more and more jars of garlic stuffed olives. And he's literally eating entire jars. And so we took him off, and within 1 week, all of his eczema was completely gone.
Wow.
I mean, it was just very impressive to me. And I hear it from my patients all the time. It's just like, Wow, man, I took that out. I really see a difference. I tried to add it back in. Wow, I could see a difference. I've never seen that on any other food sensitivity because we've run other ones before in the past. We've used this one for probably the last 3 years, but we've used all sorts of other ones, and I've never seen results like that.
Wow. Okay. Well, yeah, the proof's in the pudding there. Is there anything that is, you know, that could be relevant to the bodybuilding world that we kind of didn't cover when it comes to like hormones, thyroid, cortisol, insulin, blood sugar, all of that stuff? I mean, we got a lot of topics in, but is there anything else that we didn't cover that you would maybe want to share that would be helpful?
Well, I will say this. We do have a hyperbaric oxygen therapy area here, and it can be very, very good for decreasing inflammation and jump up healing really fast. And when you're tearing down muscles, oxygen matters. Breathing matters. Sleeping deep matters. So if you have a sleep apnea, you're not going to build muscle the way you should. If you have people smoking around you, if you're a pot smoker, I don't know how many of you out there are pot smokers, stop smoking. If you're going to do something like that, use like, you know, obviously do it appropriately, go through a doctor, get your script, whatever. But just do the oils, just take them in your mouth. Don't destroy your lungs. Because oxygen matters when you're trying to build things. Destroying your lungs is kind of like destroying your gut. If you can't get your oxygen in or your carbon dioxide out, you're going to damage your body. And that's long term. If you're damaging that again, it's damaging your brain. If you're creating stress, it's damaging your gut. Now you're back on the whole. Whoa. Funny that I coughed just now. But no, it's just really important to do everything appropriately. There's always a better bad choice out there. So you go, man, I really want to have chocolate cake. Fine. Have some chocolate cake. You know, my wife made one actually last night. We had a Memorial Day party and we had like 30 people over. And my wife's a chef and she makes indulgent, over the top, healthy treats.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
So she made a chocolate poke cake and it was almond flour, chocolate cake, did the pokes, did a chocolate, all organic pudding. And then put a chocolate ganache over the top. I ate way too much. It was awful. I felt terrible, but I'm fine today because it wasn't a highly inflammatory thing. There was no grain involved. There was no dairy involved. She mixed sugar with stevia and monk fruit. So there was still sugar. There just wasn't as much. Mm-hmm. So there was just a better bad choice way to do it. And it was super indulgent and over the top. It was wonderful. So in the regard of anything you do, just try to do the best possible choice. There's always a better choice than the bad one. You know, if you're trying to do recreational things to help you relax and things like that, do it orally. Don't do it inhaled. You know, if you're wanting to drink alcohol and have beers, don't have beers. Have yourself, you know, a gluten-free, clean, organic vodka in soda in lime. You're gonna get less calories. Doing one drink actually stimulates additional glutathione production, which is your body's major antioxidant. After you go to two or three, then it starts to decrease. But just try to do things the right way. And I think that's the most important thing, at least for me. And again, I'm not in the bodybuilding world yet, just about to get there. And so, you know, I'm going to be feeling my way through these things, but no matter what I do within that world, I'm always going to be making the better bad choice for myself.
I like that. That's really, really helpful. Are there any stress, management techniques or practices that we could implement right away that would just help with de-stressing and things like that that you recommend to your patients?
Yeah, I think most important is an hour before you go to bed, stop, get off all social media, get off all blue light. You know, if you're going to read a book, if you're going to breathe, there's things like box breathing. You breathe in for 4 seconds, hold it for 4 seconds, breathe out for 4 seconds. Hold it for 4 seconds and just keep doing that for like a minute or two. That's really helpful. You can take things like ashwagandha and ginseng and rhodiola and eleuthero. All of those things are adaptogens that help support your adrenal system. Get tested on a consistent basis. So start testing things to know what's wrong. And don't just do crap testing because it's cheap. Do testing that matters. Spend the extra money. get appropriate testing that's accurate and go, oh, this is exactly it, or that's not the problem. I can put that off to the side. I know that's not the issue. But don't leave that gray spot in your brain and go like, maybe it is, maybe it's not. I don't know if that was really a good test. Get a real test. Drink, obviously, everyone out there probably knows drinking lots of water gets you more vascular, things like that. And water's really good. I also would recommend if you're going to drink lots of water, try to drink either distilled or reverse osmosis. You can add back minerals to it. But don't drink out of plastic. I don't care if it's BPA-free or not. There's a new plastic. All the new plastics are made with, like, I think it's called QPA or QPS, which preliminary studies have shown it's more carcinogenic and more estrogen-causing than typical BPA. And we actually test for BPA here, too. Drink out of glass or stainless steel. You know, I have a 64-ounce stainless steel thing that I'd bring to the gym with me and just dominate. It's great. And actually, I have this who knows what everyone likes. It's a post-workout, but I drink it during my workout. It's got like black cherry juice in it and glutamine and just some different things. I drink it during my workout. It tastes incredible and it actually helps heal up the gut tissue because glutamine helps heal up the gut tissue. So it's all wonderful stuff. You just drink as much water as you can that's clean and not in plastic. You can take your adaptogens, do some breathing and get off your blue light. I think it's best.
Yeah. I like all of those tips. And I find that I used to make this mistake is I would heat stuff up in plastics and oh my gosh, I would never do that now. I always eat out of glass dishes and things like that. But I think sometimes when we're getting into like the prep life and we're first, you know, introduced to the bodybuilding world and eating frequently and, you know, we have a tendency to eat out of like plastic bags or like heat our stuff up into, you know, a plastic Tupperware or something like that. I'm sure that you're probably cringing right now as I'm saying that I used to do that. But
I'm just thinking about my older brother's not healthy. He does these plastic containers and he'll crack eggs in it and put it in the microwave and cook the egg in the microwave in a plastic container. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh God, why are you doing this? You know, it's just everyone's. It just depends on where you want to be. Do you want to do all those convenience things and take a bunch of pharmaceuticals and inevitably end up the last 15% of your life in a nursing home or a hospital bed? Or do you want to spend less than 1% of your life in a nursing home or hospital bed and always be in control of your health? And those are decisions you have to make. I mean, I've developed my whole life around, I'm going to take control of my life. I'm not going to be stuck on medicine the rest of my life. Some people are okay with that. Well, I'm going to eat whatever I want. If I get fat, I'll get on my phentermine and, you know, I'll just take my thyroid's dying. I'll take more thyroid hormone and my cholesterol's high. I'll take some more cholesterol medication and people live that way. That's just a thing. But if you really want to take control and do the right things.
I love that. All right. Well, I think that's a good thought to close on for sure. And that really sums up this whole interview. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on today. I've learned so much and I'm sure our listeners have as well. If they were to want to reach out to become a patient or ask you deeper questions in regards to testing and things like that, where can they find you?
So, one, our website is easily accessible. It's drgoodbinder.com, drgoodbinder.com. We are the Epigenetics Healing Center, so you can Google that up too. Our phone number is 816-673-1230. You can always give us a call. And we have people waiting to take care of you. I mean, I'm definitely the person who will actually sit down with you knee to knee. I'm not going to be behind a big desk. I won't be wearing a big white coat. I'll sit knee to knee with you and listen to you. And if you can't be in town, if you're out of the country or whatnot, we've had patients from everywhere. We'll do a Zoom consultation and figure out where to go from there. And we can just get your zip code and send labs to wherever you're at and just get it done.
That's awesome. Love that. And I'll definitely have all of that in the show notes. So if you didn't catch that, you can reference that in the show notes. And with that, this is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger. You can find us on Instagram at Glam Girl Bikini or at Prep Life Podcast. And you can apply for the team at glamgirlbikini.com. Just hit the Get Started button and we will love to set up a free phone consultation for you. So thank you so much for listening.